The latest report on climate impacts for the British government says it will cost far more to keep up our carbon pollution than it would to fix it. This comes not from an environmentalist, but from Sir Nicholas Stern, former chief economist for the World Bank. To explore the economic argument for protecting our climate, we have a Canadian economist who has been an independent consultant in energy and climate change. Michael Margalek has also worked for the Greater Vancouver Regional District. Dr. Margalek, here is one line from the Stern report. It says, "Climate change presents a unique challenge for economics. It is the greatest and widest-ranging market failure ever seen. Does this mean we need more government intervention or a new model for economics?"
I would have to say more the latter than the former. And I think it's important to understand the... It's a little bit like when you have all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. I mean, the scope of the problem is so long-term, the impact's unknown, and in particular the so-called damage costs, the economic losses resulting from climate change itself, are extremely difficult to estimate. So, you know, the economic framework in which you are really seeking a benefit-to-cost ratio is somewhat inadequate as a mental framework for dealing with the problem.
So the economics being taught in universities today, they don't, as far as I can understand, take into account the real costs of carbon pollution. Is that right?
Well, it's really the question is, what do you mean by the real costs? I mean, under an economic interpretation, there's all kinds of rules and methods of evaluation and techniques, and they've advanced considerably, and there's a rich, you know, a rich intellectual tradition that's been built up on how to deal with these things. But I think that especially the best economists in particular are the ones that caveat the reports very heavily, as does the Stern report, by saying, you know, this problem is so large, long-term, complex, global in nature that the tools of economics are of limited utility in understanding it.
Well, the worst problems in the report are predicted for people living closer to the equator, for the poorest countries like Bangladesh. Do you think the North American economy can just go ahead and prosper while hundreds of millions of people may suffer from our carbon pollution?
Well, no, and obviously this is a huge global equity issue and was... you know, really treated that way in the UN negotiations that led to the Framework Convention and the Kyoto Protocol. There's no doubt in my mind that the developed economies will have much more ability, just by virtue of their wealth and their ability to reallocate resources and have the resources. They will not suffer to nearly the same extent as the less developed economies. And so, yeah, it represents big shifts in global welfare.
In global welfare, there have even been suggestions that we're going to have to be taxed, perhaps to reimburse or pay for the damage that's being done to other countries. Do you think that will become a reality?
I'm in the current, you know, the way the world works now, I can't imagine an international tax or related to, you know, excess consumption by the North, for example. You know, the Kyoto Protocol did involve a trading framework in which developing countries could be rewarded for emission reduction projects that they do in their countries, but that's really a very small corner of the kind of economic shifts that we're talking about. So, yeah, I can't see the nations of the world getting together and agreeing to a tax on consumption in wealthy countries like that.
Well, getting back to Canada, how can business adopt to a leaner carbon model?
The most effective instrument for business is to price CO2 emissions. That is the way that the business world works. It's a very efficient way of allocating the costs of emission reduction, and so I've always been an advocate of a cap and trade system for Canadian industry.
And I know that some of the early adapters have lost out. They didn't have the support of government or even consumer awareness. Do you think it's finally time to make some money from alternative energy?
Well, I think people are making money from alternative energy. Wind power is the fastest, one of the fastest growing, well, the fastest growing energy source in the world, and one of the fastest growing industries, period. So I think, you know, it's largely economic factors, things like the price of natural gas going up, that have caused growth in alternative energy. But I think that shift is happening.
Were you an advisor for a company that was trying to put up wind power here in BC?
I am an officer of an employee of a wind power development company, yes.
And how is that coming? Because as far as I know, we don't have a big wind farm off the coast of BC yet.
No, but we're trying to build one.
And what are the hurdles towards building it? Is it getting the investment or the government permits, or what do you think is...
There are many hurdles to investment in this project, as there are to any power project in BC. Any project, including ours, will have to obtain environmental permission. It will have to consult with and obtain some form of agreement with First Nations in whose traditional territory the project lies. It will have to, most importantly, obtain a power purchase agreement with a buyer, and of course the big buyer in the province is BC Hydro. It will have to obtain various permits, in the case of small hydro, municipal permits, and so on. So, there are many barriers to development of any power project in this province.
Well, you mentioned municipal permits, but it sounds like the province is bypassing that and saying, well, we'll issue all the permits.
Yes, that is Bill 30, and that has occurred, yeah.
The provincial government seems stuck in the old mold to me. They're building more highways for cars and trucks. What do you think the Greater Vancouver Regional District should be doing?
Well, the GVRD does have its livable region strategic plan, and I understand that certain elements of the Gateway program have been deemed to be inconsistent with that plan. I don't know how much statutory or legal power the GVRD has to change these things, but I think a political position in support of the existing LRSP and the principles in it makes a lot of sense for the region.
What's the LRSP? I'm sorry.
Livable Region Strategic Plan.
Good. All right. And how has your own work touched on energy and climate change?
I've worked in the sector for almost 30 years. I was an employee of BC Hydro and Resource Planning. I was the executive director of the BC Energy Council. I consulted for about 12 years for clients in industry, government, and for NGOs as well. I've done many, many different things over the course of my career in energy and climate change.
So from that viewpoint, do you think that the Stern Report is some sort of turning point as far as both government and business will be concerned?
Well, I think it'll have a significant effect in the UK, but the UK is already, what the report does is indicate or support the direction that the UK government is taking. I don't really know. I mean, there have been many other integrated assessments that have come up with conclusions in the similar direction, although I have to say the Stern Report is very comprehensive and definite in its conclusions. But, yeah, I mean, it's another report that supports taking action, and I think it's a good thing.
We've been speaking with economist Michael Margalek. Thanks for talking with Radio EcoShock.
My pleasure.